Chapter 3. Why do people abuse? Family photograph albums remind us of good times. However, it's the moments among the pages that often are the most memorable, often for the wrong reasons. A client, Cindy, brought in photos from her childhood that her mother had given her. Cindy was confused as to why some of the pictures bothered her so much. As I looked at them, it was clear from her expressions and body language that something was off with her and her brother. Upon further discussion, Cindy revealed that her brother had molested her from the ages of 8 through 14. As we begin to identify the family secrets holding us back and patterns we've naturally followed, I hope this chapter becomes one of the most eye-opening for you, as it was for Cindy. As suggested, our genetic code has been handed down from many generations, but more recently, from our grandparents. Additionally, their upbringing or conditioning, traumas and abuse circumstances affected how they raised your parents, who also come hardwired in certain ways unique to your family. Your parents grew up in an entirely different era from their folks' formative years, so they had to adapt to other stresses. Then we were raised in a completely different era, characterized by such things as new technologies and ease of travel. Our kids tend to be raised on mobile devices rather than on farms or learning a trade like our great-grandparents. There are a host of reasons why someone would become an abuser, even if they don't realize it or want to acknowledge it. In this chapter, I'll explain a variety of reasons to help understand the causes and potential solutions. To start off, one example comes from the Duluth model, which blames society for teaching men to assert male dominance over women, with a motivation for power and control. While the model has forged a strategy that involves several community organizations to support the rehabilitation of men, I believe the main precept is partially true for some batterers, but doesn't account for many other possible reasons. Often, the abuser is not motivated by power and control, as the Duluth model suggests. For some abusers, the behavior is more automatic and reactive, as is the response from the abused. It is as if they are playing out a scripted role written generations before. Here are a couple of examples. When asked by her therapist, "Have you ever been abused?" Nicole said, "No." But then, for a split second, she looked down and frowned. Instinctively, her therapist knew something was off. A few more minutes of probing revealed a boyfriend with anger problems. During fits of rage, he would destroy her personal property, grab her and not let her go, and call her obscene names. One time he dragged her out of the car, then turned the car around to run her over. She dodged the car and had to walk quite a distance before hitching a ride home from a stranger. Yet, Nick Holt still did not see his behavior as abusive. In a different therapy session, Nate was asked the same question. His first answer was also no, but when he was asked to describe his relationship with his brother, he said it was non-existent. Further inquiries revealed that his parents would lock him and his older brother in a room to figure it out when arguments arose. That led to Nate being physically and verbally beaten up as a child, called a loser, a weakling, and always in the way. On one occasion, Nate was held underwater by his brother until he passed out and needed to be revived. Yet again, Nate did not see that behavior as abusive, but the impact hurt him in different ways. He struggled with emotional overeating and couldn't hold down a relationship, largely due to poor self-esteem, which became virtually non-existent. For Nicole and Nate, abusive behavior became acceptable. While neither of them would tolerate a friend being abused in similar manners, it had become okay for them. Even after being confronted, they defended their abusers, took responsibility for their abusers' behavior, and minimized the impact. Over time, therapy helped Nicole to gain the strength to tell others about what was happening and stand up for herself. Nate also gained the strength to write a letter to his brother regarding the abuse while gradually testing new boundaries with him. It worked, and today the brothers have a better relationship. How does this happen? I've categorized abuse patterns into three types. First, generational, abuse learned or passed down genetically and from the family tree. Second, conditional, how we were raised, including the environments, cultures, and behaviors that formed our belief systems and understanding of abuse and right and wrong. Third, circumstantial, when generational and conditional patterns add up, various circumstances can apply pressure that forces the situation to escalate. If left without being addressed, the problem will likely repeat. These are broad categories, but with them, you can ask yourself, how does this apply to me? First, examine the possible generational factors hardwired into your family history. Then, consider your upbringing and the various conditions that came into play in your development. Between these first two categories, you can already see how each one of us has certain vulnerabilities. When the triggering circumstance occurs, it's like the straw that breaks the camel's back. 13 Reasons Why People Abuse. Hands down, the number one question I get asked in therapy is, why would they do this? Mostly, this stems from a person who has been abused and is trying desperately to understand why their attacker is abusive. There are many forms of abuse, as we will see in the coming chapters, but typically they fall into these basic categories: verbal, mental, emotional, physical, sexual, financial, and spiritual. Even if a person realizes the full scope of their abuse, it is difficult to comprehend why someone would do that to them. Please note that I'm not intending to explain, justify, or rationalize abuse, nor am I trying to elicit empathy or sympathy for the abuser. Abuse is wrong all the time, under all circumstances, regardless of the severity. Rather, the intent is to shed light on a question that plagues the abused, to gain the understanding that all people do not have the same perspective of right and wrong, and to move the healing process further for those who have been damaged. Here are 13 reasons why a person becomes abusive. First, they were abused. Some abusers act out their dysfunctional behavior on others because it was done to them. In a subconscious effort to resolve their own abuse, they do the same to another person. This type of abusive behavior is identical, meaning it almost exactly matches their childhood experience. Another example throws this past in the opposite direction. For instance, a boy who is sexually abused by a man might grow up to sexually abuse girls as evidence that he is not a homosexual. The reverse can be true as well. Second, they have a disorder. A small fraction of the population has antisocial personality disorder, sociopathic or psychopathic, and is sadistic. People with these disorders gain pleasure from seeing others in pain and even more pleasure when they are the ones inflicting the agony. For them, abuse is a means to an end. They abuse others to gain personal pleasure, which follows the Duluth model for explaining abuse as a method to assert power and/or control. Third, they are addicted to alcohol and/or drugs. Whether under the influence or not, the addicted person is not completely in control of his or her own thoughts, words, and behaviors. When under the influence, they can justify just about anything, including abusive behaviors. When sober, they are irritable because their brain and body are waiting for the next fix. People who are associated with addicts often enable the addictions, becoming doormats or offering excuses for the addict's choices, which are lies. Fourth, they have seen or heard something hostile. With the advances in technology comes additional exposure at a young age to glorified abuse. Some movies, songs, TV shows, and video games minimize abuse by making fun of it or making it seem normal. They may even give the abuser new ideas. Fifth, they have anger issues. Uncontrolled and unmanaged rage frequently produces abusive behavior. The source of this anger varies, but it is usually tied to a traumatic event or pattern. Unresolved trauma sparks anger when triggered by a person, circumstance, or place. Because this anger comes out of nowhere, it's that much harder to control and manifests abusively. This type of abuser is easier to spot, as the abuse is almost always preceded by an angry outburst. Many people stay with this type of abuser, believing that if they help to minimize the rage, everything will be different. 6. They grew up with an addict. An addict blames others for the reason they engage in a destructive behavior, while their victims are often forced to remain silent and acceptant of their behavior. The end result is a lot of pent-up anger and abusive behavior. As an adult, the victim subconsciously seeks out others to blame for their actions. 7th, they have control issues. Some people like to be in charge, which is also a characteristic of the Duluth model. In an effort to gain or remain in control of others, they utilize inefficient means of dominance, such as bullying or intimidation. While forced control can be executed quickly, it does not last. True leadership is void of abusive techniques. 8th, they don't understand boundaries. Abusive people tend to lack the understanding of where they end and another person begins. They see their spouse, child, friend as an extension of themselves and therefore believe the other person is not entitled to have any boundaries. A lack of healthy boundaries opens the door for the power-hungry abuser. 9th, they are afraid. People who do and say things out of fear tend to use their emotions as justification for why another person needs to do what is demanded. It is as if the fear is so important or powerful that nothing else matters except what is needed to subdue it. So they abuse because of their fear and because the abuse is their dysfunctional way of generating the same fear in others. Think, misery loves company. 10th, they lack empathy. It is far easier to abuse others when there is no empathy for how the victim might feel. Some types of head trauma, personality disorders, and environmental traumas can cause a person to lack the ability to express empathy. Without empathy, abuse is just a means to an end. 11th, they have a personality disorder. Just because a person has a personality disorder, that does not mean that they will be abusive. However, after working with many people with personality disorders, I've seen how the disorder feeds into an inaccurate perception of reality, which increases the risk of abusive behavior. If a person is unable to see their behavior as abusive, a common trait for narcissists, psychopaths, or sociopaths, then they will keep doing it. 12th, they are exhausted. When a person reaches the end of their rope, it is not uncommon for them to lash out at whoever is conveniently close. Think of it as a mental breakdown where all the things stuffed inside come pouring out, usually in a destructive rather than a constructive manner.